Support for Tested comes from Duke Health, reminding listeners that COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, and can protect individuals and others from the virus. Together, communities can end this pandemic. Find sites for a free vaccine at dukehealth.org.
This is Tested from WUNC. A look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South. I'm Charlie Shelton-Ormond. About a year ago, investigative reporter Kate Martin was covering a federal civil court case in Asheville. The trial centered on constitutional violations by Cherokee County's Department of Social Services in western North Carolina. As the case unfolded, Kate heard something that caught her attention.
I heard one of the lawyers say that there was a waiver that Cindy Palmer, the director of DSS for Cherokee County, was granted to work there because she wasn't qualified for the job.
For at least 10 years, Cherokee County's social services had coerced parents to forfeit care of their children by having them sign a document called a custody and visitation agreement.
There's nothing necessarily wrong with doing that. However, if you're the government, you have to do it when people are represented by lawyers and there has to be a judge involved. And when there are no lawyers and no judges involved, then it becomes a violation of a parent and child's constitutional rights. It's, you know, custody agreements are fine if you're working through a lawyer or a process, or you're getting divorced and figuring out who has the kids on what days. But if the government is involved, everybody has to be represented by lawyers and there has to be a judge.
And that just was not happening in Cherokee County.
Absolutely not. There were no judges. There were no lawyers. For instance, there was a parent who was told, you have 24 hours to sign this document or we're taking your kid away and putting him in foster care where you're never going to see your kid again. And that kid was given to a family who the mom was concerned about because there were kids there who'd been sexually abused. And later the kid comes back home to mom and the kid had been sexually abused. And the mom had even emailed Cindy Palmer about it and nothing was done.
After years of court battles and shifting roles within the department, Cindy Palmer eventually resigned from Cherokee County DSS. She then pled guilty to a felony charge tied to the department's malpractice. But this problem of underqualified social workers wasn't isolated to Cherokee County. Once Kate heard this revelation during the trial in 2021, that Palmer came into the role as director without meeting the minimum qualifications, she started to do some digging.
So I started doing records requests with all the agencies that might have issued a waiver. I checked with the Cherokee County Department of Social Services, and then I worked my way up Cherokee County, and then I asked DHHS. And everyone was being real dodgy about what this waiver was. And it turns out DHHS doesn't even grant waivers for something like this. And all of the hiring power is at the local level. And so that's how I got into this. And I started asking, well, then how is it that somebody who wasn't even qualified for the job even got to work there?
After Kate found out the State Department of Health and Human Services doesn't have hiring power for this, she checked in with another state office.
I started talking to the Office of State Human Resources, and they said, well, over here's the law. And the law says that you have to hire people from a pool of qualified applicants. And from among those qualified applicants, you pick the very most qualified as a finalist or the group of finalists that you choose from. The law is there, but we can't do anything if they decide to go against that law. And so I just thought, well, gosh, there's got to be other unqualified directors out there. And so I just started asking around.
That asking around led to Kate's recent series for Carolina Public Press. It's called Dodging Standards, and it examines how counties in North Carolina are able to hire people for social service jobs who don't meet the minimum qualifications.
Well, I asked other counties, do you have an unqualified director? And I did it in about 10 counties up in the Northeast. And of those 10 counties, two of them were not qualified when they were hired. They were very rural. They did not have any other applicants who were qualified who applied for their positions. regarding the other 90 counties, I tried to get that information through the Department of Health and Human Services. They said they don't track how many directors are qualified for their jobs. I also tried to get that information through the Office of State Human Resources, which, you know, arguably has a closer relationship with counties when it comes to hiring these high profile positions. They said their lawyer advised them not to tell me.
Mm. And this, to me, points to how North Carolina is distinct from other states in terms of this 100-county piecemeal approach to the social services network across the state. Can you tell me more about what makes North Carolina distinct when it comes to Department of Social Services?
Yeah, so most states, when they administer child welfare, it's a statewide approach. You have the state office in the capital usually, and then you maybe you'll have regional offices. You have people working in those regional offices, and they'll go out to multiple counties to respond to the variety of duties that they have. In North Carolina and eight other states, it's a county-administered state-supervised system. And so basically, it's like the county is its own state, like in those other states where they administer it there. They administer everything. The state is supposed to be in sort of a supervisory, advisory role. Like they can help people with, you know, tough questions. They sometimes will administer training or provide training to the counties. Also, the feds, the federal government pays the state, and the state is the one that parcels out all the money in accordance with the federal law and policy.
I get concerned that directors that aren't fully qualified creates a systematic vulnerability.
Kevin Marino is an interim director for Rutherford County, and he is concerned about unqualified directors. One of the things he said to me is, you don't know what you don't know.
If you haven't worked in children's services and you have not fully trained in the statutes and the policies of government, then how can you answer questions that your staff need on a regular basis? How can you weigh in to these life and death scenarios every single day if you don't understand that policy and law? You have to rely on those that are actually doing the work, but they also need support.
And if you have somebody who's underneath you who comes to you with a question about child welfare and policy, and you're not strong in that area, and Cindy Palmer wasn't strong in that area, then what do you tell that person? What if you have a lawyer who tells you that it's okay to sign a document called a custody and visitation agreement, and you're a director who maybe has taken the classes, but you may not be so strong in child welfare to tell the lawyer that this isn't how this is supposed to work?
Something that you highlight in your reporting is that if someone does not meet those qualifications when they're hired, there is a way around that called the work against process. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So let's say you get hired as a social worker too, but you only qualify to be a social worker one. And so what you can do is you can take extra training. And then you also, the amount of time that you spend as a social worker one is working against that social worker two position. It's kind of like on the job training, but also right, experience with the role.
Thinking a little bit more about the 100 county network of social service offices, I mean, it's no secret that resources vary widely across the state, county by county. Can you tell me more about how that influences the social service hiring process and their operations itself?
It can be very disruptive for small counties who are unable to pay as much as their surrounding neighbors. I mean, there's a social worker shortage anywhere. There's even other positions at these offices. When one county pays less than another, and it's only a 20-minute drive to get a $10,000 pay bump, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see, you know, where those workers are going to be going, if they have a choice.
And you talked with Adonica Hampton in Granville County, which is just north of Durham County and is close to Orange County and pretty close to Wake County, too. And she is in this position that you're outlining here. Can you tell me more about what she told you?
Yeah. So she had done a lot of research before our interview, which I really appreciated. It's almost like when I talked to her on the phone, it was like I could see a map in the air as she was telling me about it. She said, we're an easy interstate drive to 6 different counties. You know, Durham is 29 miles. Raleigh is 51 miles. Wake Forest is 27 miles. Burlington is 64 miles. And all of these other places pay more than Granville County. And what that means is people who are gaining experience, a lot of the time they're being poached by these other counties.
When I look at my social work staff, I have tremendous number of seasoned social workers. However, they are retiring. We're holding on with social workers right now, but that's the next wave. But we've been struggling with economic services staffing for years prior to me even becoming a director here in 2019.
When you have all of your experienced workers leaving for whatever reason, you don't have the institutional memory of how things have worked in your office, and your turnover can be quite high.
Well, one of the things that stood out to me from your reporting is how little money North Carolina puts into social service departments compared to similar states. North Carolina is not the only state with this county-by-county network, yet it invests a lot less in social service departments compared to those similar states. Can you tell me more about how North Carolina does stack up compared to other states?
So again, remember that North Carolina is in a state-supervised, county-administered system, and there's 9 states, including North Carolina, like it. There was a report that I had found that showed that the child welfare funding per child in North Carolina was the lowest of the 9 states for all 3 funding sources, from the federal, the state, and the local funds. And the biggest gap, according to the report that I found, was at the state level. So for instance, you know, North Carolina also spent the least compared with the 7 southeastern states, with $52 in the state funds spent per child. You know, compared to the next lowest was $86 in South Carolina, and Kentucky spent $403. So it's North Carolina is very much behind all of the southeastern states when it comes to state funding for child welfare.
So it sounds like just a completely different, completely improved infrastructure of support is much needed for social workers. What are some of the other solutions that are maybe more on the table, if there are some, for changing the social services network in North Carolina?
You know, there are legislative solutions. They could, you know, bump the pay per child up at least to South Carolina's level at $86 per child. I mean, that would definitely help a lot of counties. And Jeff Harrison, the DSS director for Lenoir County, he said the turnover rate in his child welfare office was 61%. They have many open positions. And I asked him, like, what would it look like if you didn't have this massive turnover and weren't scrambling to hire more people and you had the resources that you need? Like, what would this look like for you and your residents? And it's like he almost couldn't imagine what that would be like. He took several seconds before he responded. He said,
oh, it would be a dream. There's so much we could do, and we could spend more time with the families and the children that we serve to make sure we're meeting those needs. And it doesn't become a rapid fire type response, or as I call it, an emergency response. We'd be able to actually spend some time with families and figure out what is the cause of why we're knocking on your door, and what is it that we can do to strengthen your ability as a family to ensure your children's safety, permanency, and well-being.
Going back to Cherokee County, something that was really powerful and startling from your reporting is that the cost that the county has incurred is jeopardizing the future of the county itself. Could you talk a little bit more about, you know, the impact of this on Cherokee County specifically?
About 24 families have sued Cherokee County. The first lawsuit was Brian Hogan and his daughter. She's a teenager. She was removed from him by the county using this paperwork, and Mr. Hogan was able to get her back. But then he sued civilly, and he and his daughter won $4.6 million in a federal lawsuit. And the county has not appealed that. It appears that they are going to be required to pay that money. I've been told they have the money to do it, but there's also several other lawsuits that the county has settled And there's all these other like 20 or so lawsuits still hanging out there that the lawyers are trying to sort of collectively settle. And so there's still a question about that. Now, altogether, the county has been required to pay almost $11 million of settlements, lawyer fees, and the federal money that was awarded. It's my understanding that the county may not be able to borrow money at this point, and I'm trying to track that down. There could be a point where if they are unable to pay this money, that the state local government commission would step in, which would be the first time the state local government commission has ever stepped in for a county's finances. It could get very dire. They could raise property taxes on the residents of Cherokee County, and they're not wealthy to begin with.
If you want to learn more about Kate Martin's reporting in the series Dodging Standards, visit carolinapublicpress.org. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Charlie Shelton-Ormond.